You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the Westside Community News, and today we're continuing to dive into free agency for the Pacers' upcoming free agent players. We've already done O'Shea Brissett, Lance Stephenson, and a trio of guards in Dwayne Washington, Ricky Rubio, and Kiefer Sykes. Today, we'll go into the unique and interesting case of Jalen Smith, why the Pacers would want to bring him back, why they might not want to, the complicated factors at play with his contract situation, some evaluation comparisons for free agents last summer, the whole works of his free agency period coming up for the Pacers. And it's a fascinating case because of the rules at play here and Jalen Smith's desires, making this maybe the most fascinating free agent for the Pacers this summer. Him or T.J. Warren, to me. Jalen Smith, T.J. Warren, and Ricky Rubio set the Pacers up for a ridiculously fascinating summer from a cap dork perspective. So let's dive right in. Look, it doesn't take a rocket scientist or a brain surgeon or whatever fancy career you want to choose to figure out why the Pacers would want Jalen Smith back, right? This section is very easy. The Pacers traded for Jalen Smith in that Torrey Craig deal. They got a second round pick on top of it. That's how low his value was at the time of the trade deadline. Part of that is because of that declined option. But still, Jalen Smith comes to the Pacers and just kicks some ass. Like, he turned his entire play around with the Suns per 36 minutes. You know, worst scorer this season, 16.5 points, worst rebounder, worst with the steals, worst with the assists, like way more turnovers, shot less efficiency. Everything was worse. Comes to the Pacers. Lights out three-point shooter, 37%, finishing inside the arc, a beast on the glass, a mobile defender, a versatile multi-position guy. He just transformed everything, right? Impact stats, pick your fave, like box plus minus. With the Suns this season, minus 2.3 with the Pacers, plus 0.8. With the Suns as a rookie, minus 6.1. With the Pacers, he was a positive. Like, he fixed every wart in his game so fast. He was still not a perfect player. In fact, some stats would say he was still basically just a league average player. But at his age and given his baseline of what he was with Phoenix, it was a huge improvement, right? Knocking down the threes was obviously a big part of that, but 80% at the rim with the Pacers, 79.4, excuse me, to be more specific, finished the floaters, finished in the mid-range. Like, he completely transformed who he was when he got traded. And the Pacers found a way to make him effective, right? Because he could space out and he was good at above the breakthroughs, he could play the four for them. His mobility on defense allowed him to play the four. Because he could play two positions, he just became instantly mega valuable for the Pacers down the stretch of the season. And that led to success, not just for him, but for the whole team. Like, with him out there, minus 1.96 net rating, that's not good, but that's like tolerable. That's close to a play-in team, I suppose. Not this year, but in a normal year. With him off, minus 3.9, which is close to like a bottom five team in the league. So he was a huge plus two net on-off net impact for him this year. He was just massive for the team's success. And because his skills were so varied, right, he was able to play multiple positions, be on the floor with multiple guys. He showed he's a good fit with Haliburton because he's a shooter, because he can move pretty well, he can cut. Like, he could fit with everybody. Jalen Smith was very good for the Pacers this year, especially compared to expectations. That's why they want him back. I don't have to explain that to anyone. Anyone who watched him play with the Pacers understands the appeal of having him back is his talent. And the extra benefit is that he's young, right? That's part of what is so interesting about his situation. Like, he was the 10th pick in 2020. He got drafted into the NBA in November of 2020. Like, he's only been in the league for about 17 months. Really? I mean, that is such a short time. Like, most guys who get drafted, their 17th month in the league is like the tip off of their second season, not already concluded the whole first two. Like, that's how quick these guys who were drafted in 2020's career is gone. That's why I think also Tyrese Haliburton could be due for a nice big jump and impact next year. But like, contextualizing Jalen Smith's age and time he's been in the league and skill, like, it makes sense why he took a jump when he did after being traded to the Pacers, and it makes sense that he could continue to grow. And since the Pacers are now a young and growing team, it makes all the sense in the world why they would want him back. Varied positions, strong impact, good skills, good fit with their now franchise cornerstone, Tyrese Haliburton. I don't have to explain this to anyone, but I will take this time, instead of the next section where you talk about the reasons they might not want him back, and it's not as simple as just good, young, talented, good fit. But the trouble here, and this has been explained many times, but I will do it again, is that Jalen Smith, His rookie scale contract that he signed with the Suns after being drafted 10th overall was declined heading into next season. So he's now an unrestricted free agent this summer to 29 teams in the NBA. But he's kind of not an unrestricted free agent for the Pacers, which is hard to explain. So I'll explain the why again, even though I've done this on a few pods before, but for people who haven't heard. So the way this works is when you're drafted in the first round, you're on a rookie scale contract, which has two guaranteed seasons, the first two, and then the third and fourth are team option seasons. And those options are decided a full year in advance, unlike normal team options. So the Suns, who had Jalen Smith, had to decide if they wanted to have the third year of Jalen Smith under contract after his first season. And on the very last day they could decide, which was November 1st of 2021, again, less than a year after he was drafted, because the 2020 draft, remember, was in November of that year, right? So less than a year after he's drafted, they said, nope, we don't want him on the team the next year, right? And the year after, sorry. So his third year option is declined. And so that the way this rule is once that option is declined, the team that owns the player on the rookie scale deal cannot then sign the same player for more money. And the reason is so that what happened, like let's just pretend we're talking about Zion Williamson here, the number one pick in that same draft. Let's say that he obviously was amazing. Like he was an all-star. He very clearly is already amazing, right? But let's pretend after 1 year, the Pelicans were like, yeah, we understand that Zion Williamson is going to be amazing. He was the 2019 number one pick, wasn't he? Whatever. We'll just keep using Zion as an example. So let's pretend after the first year, the Pelicans are like, yep, he's going to be awesome. And then they decline the third year option and just give him a max contract, right? Then what's the point of the rookie scale? You have circumvented the entire point of this contract that's written into the CBA as a part of, you know, making sure there's enough money spread around for veterans and all this other stuff. Like it's sort of also a protection for teams so they don't end up paying a ton of money to a young player who falls off. But, you know, this is a collectively bargained contract that the rookie scale deals are like this, and they don't want it to be circumvented. So you can't decline your team options for your rookie scale deals and give them a huge bump. So the Suns declined that third-year option for Jalen Smith, but then he got traded to the Pacers still on that contract. So now the Pacers have the limitations that the Suns set in place by declining this option. I don't know what the Pacers would have done had they had Jalen Smith. You know, we have evidence of them recently being an over-the-cap team that picks up those options with TJ Leaf and Goga Batadze. They also declined Solomon Hills a few years ago, but they had cap space the following summer. You know, it kind of depends on your cap situation in general, and the Suns are about to be expensive, so it makes sense why this all happened this way. But the Pacers are now the team that is limited by the Suns' decision. So the Pacers now cannot offer Jalen Smith more than what he would have made on his rookie scale deal in season three, which is $4,670,160. $4.67 million is the most the Pacers can offer Jalen Smith in year three. Any other team in the league, he's unrestricted. He can get whatever he wants from another team. Now, there's another wrinkle. The fourth year also is a factor here. The Suns declined the third-year team option on Jalen Smith, but they also would have had a fourth-year option this year. So if Jalen Smith returns to the Pacers, the most he can make in year four with the Pacers is $5,954,454. With any other team, it is much more than that, right? It is whatever they decide to pay him. And so for the next 2 years, effectively the most the Pacers can pay Jalen Smith is about $10.7 million over 2 years. They can structure that deal with a player option if they want. They can sign him to a deal worth less than that if he takes it. You know, though, that is the restriction. That is the basically the most they can offer him over the next 2 years. And so they could in the third year in the future offer him more, but they can't offer that on the next contract, right? Because they can only offer within those limitations, then only offer raises off of that. So it's really hard for the Pacers to give him a competitive value if he is ultimately worth more than that this summer. We'll talk about his actual, at least what you have to think about, his value in the third segment. But the Pacers are limited in what they can offer this year, and if they do get him for the third year, they are also limited in what they can offer in year four. And that's where I think option years in general will be a factor in this discussion. So that isn't the negative. The negatives I'll talk about in a second. That's just the situation. So the reasons the Pacers would keep Jalen Smith and would like to have him on that contract or at that value is because he was really good for them as an outside shooter, as a floor spacer, as a cutter. I thought his defense was actually pretty solid. He made some nice passing reads, super athletic. Like everything he did was just an effective, solid player. 6'10" perimeter threat, top 10 pick. Great trade for the Pacers. That worked out really well for them, especially to get a second round pick as well. Like given what Torrey Craig was giving them, great trade. But they're extremely limited in what they can offer Jalen Smith. And if you'll recall, Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report, I believe who it was, reported that they were trying to move him again. I will verify that it was Jake Fisher. They were trying to move him again after that trade was done, right? So That was, part of it. Like, the Pacers kind of realized this at the time, even before he really popped. So Jake Fisher said, yes, it was Jake Fisher. Jalen Smith is unlikely to remain in Indiana. Pacers are receiving significant interest in the young forward. But then he did end up remaining in Indiana and exploding, and now they have to deal with these parameters. So, yes, bunch of reasons Jalen Smith, the Pacers might want him back. Like, the list of reasons they would want him back is longer than what I'm about to explain the reasons they wouldn't want him back, but they have a lot of tough parameters to operate within, and that's what makes this free agency so fascinating. So let's talk about some of those reasons Jalen Smith, the Pacers might not want to bring him back. I know that sounds crazy given what I just said, but hear me out. I promise these are actually legitimately good reasons. Before we talk about them, though, I want to talk about Athletic Greens, our next partner, a product I use literally every day. AG1, I started taking it because it helps me in the morning. I don't have a lot of time. It helps me get better gut health, more energy, and an optimized immune system for every single day of my life. What is this stuff? With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, nervous system, immune system, energy, recovery, focus, and aging, all the things. It's lifestyle friendly. If you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, whatever, it's great for you. It's a small micro habit with huge benefits and something you can do every single day to take great care of yourself. You got to try it right now. Reclaim your health. Arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. And to make it easy, Athletic Greens will give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you got to do is visit athleticgreens.com/NBA Network. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/NBA Network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, Locked On NBA Big Board is the way to go. Hear more about the NBA draft, all the prospects, all the decisions, everything at play. Those guys are absolutely killer. They've been traveling around the country, going to workouts, talking to college coaches. It's crazy that those guys, what they do around this time of year. So let's talk about the reasons the Pacers might not want to bring Jalen Smith back. And this is interesting because, you know, again, for a young, talented player, it seems like a slam dunk reason you would want to bring him back. But it's not that easy, and it's mostly because of the limitations that the Pacers have in offering him. Because if you'll go back in time, and if you want to hear this, I posted a podcast with Jalen Smith's audio of what he said when asked about his free agency this coming summer. But something he said at his exit interview was, you know, this is going to be an agonizing decision for him, right? He'll have to be up late at night talking to his family and his agent and really thinking about it. And opportunity and fit are going to be huge factors for him, which makes a ton of sense. He is 22 years old, right? These free agency decisions are really important for him. If he goes somewhere where he's not going to play very much or be featured, like, he could never get a contract again. So even if he takes less money somewhere where he does get a huge opportunity or does fit very well and will be able to shine and get another contract in the future, that might have more value than a shorter term deal with more money, right? So fit and opportunity, huge factors for Jalen Smith in free agency. He admitted that himself. So the way the Pacers, assuming that Jalen Smith is worth more than $4.67 million this coming season, which, you know, as we just went through, his number suggests that he might have exceeded that value in his time with the Pacers, then the way the Pacers could lure him in is by giving him that opportunity. And they already know he fits pretty well, but by finding a way to give him that opportunity, which sounds great. You know, it wouldn't take too much to find backup center or backup power forward minutes for him. Trade Goga Batadze, trade Miles Turner. Sure. To me, that you got to stop right there and think. You know, Jalen Smith was clearly very good for the Pacers. This is not meant to belittle what he did, but there's a point where, you know, to squeeze him in on a limited salary that you then have to squeeze in again the next year when he could leave again as an unrestricted free agent next summer if they do the contract structure that makes the most sense to me, they would have to give up probably Goga to squeeze up some minutes there and one of Miles Turner, Isaiah Jackson, to have the available front court minutes to let him play either center a bunch off the bench or power forward a bunch off the bench. And maybe that's fine. Maybe the Pacers say, yep, that makes a lot of sense. If we give up these bigs, we'll have the opportunity for him. We can run with whichever big we keep. Plus, Jalen Smith is our centers. We've got O'Shea Brissett, right? We've got three solid young front court pieces. Great, we're in. You know, maybe the Pacers think that way. But dumping those assets to get minutes for Jalen Smith may not be worth it to them, right? The trades that it might require to free up the opportunity for Smith, you know, if that's an added benefit to a trade they already have in place, maybe this can be viewed as a positive. But if you're making a trade to free up minutes for a guy that, I will concede, yes, Jalen Smith was great, but also I think it's important to concede that this was a 22-game sample, right? He played 29 games for Phoenix, and he played 382 minutes for them and 543 minutes here in Indiana, right? Who, those sample sizes are different, but not like so much different. You know, what if he is closer to the middle of those two things, or closer to the guy he was in Phoenix, and he just had a hot stretch in Indiana? He only took 83 three-pointers. It's not that many in terms of a stable sample size. This is just a devil's advocate moment of saying, you know, it may not be worth it to the Pacers to even free up that level of opportunity to bring Jalen Smith back, because the limitations are really stringent and it might require a lot of finagling to get those minutes free. And oh, by the way, they might have to do it again in a year, because then let's say the year passes and Jalen Smith says, yes, I would like to remain with the Pacers, but I need even more opportunity to take $5.9 million because I was just awesome for you and the fit and opportunity you just gave me. Then they might have to find a way to clear up even more minutes for him. So if he's going to pop and be amazing, then great. It makes all the sense in the world for the Pacers to pursue an amazing young player who could be great for them. And if they view him that way, maybe they are willing to sell a little lower on some of their other bigs to free up minutes for him. But in general, I think that the nature of, you know, the situation that he's in and the contract situation the Pacers have means it may not actually be worth it to them to sacrifice what they would have to do to keep him around. And I think the other part is, you know, of the negatives is just the sample size. And I just kind of went through it, but it's kind of jarring how few minutes 543 is for a player with the Pacers. Like, other guys have shown in terrible stretches of that amount of time and kind of been written off completely in a way that, you know, maybe they would have bounced back somewhere else, or they have bounced back somewhere else. Like, young guys on second contract young guys is a thing, right? It's talked about as like guys who really struggled with their first team and then get a better opportunity with their second team, and, you know, teams view that they can grow a project player to better than they were with their first team with a new team. It's called the second contract youngster. And that's a thing that happens all the time, because the young guys get written off occasionally at their stops because of small sample sizes, right? The inverse is totally possible. And in total, yes, Jalen Smith actually played more minutes with the Pacers, 543, than in 2 years in Phoenix at 538. But that still are, both of those are about equal samples. So yes, he was probably in a better role with the Pacers, being able to have the ball more, being in more versatile positions. Like, his usage with the Pacers was 20.1%. With the Suns in his rookie year, it was 17.1%. But with the Suns this season, it was higher than it was with the Pacers, right? So, like, that's a better team with better surrounding talent than the Pacers this year. Like, obviously the Pacers ecosystem, something clicked with him. Like, it kept working every game. It can't be that much of a fluke. But who's to say that the 543 minutes with Indiana are way more important for the Pacers to make decisions based on than the 538 minutes he played with Phoenix? And that is also, I think, a factor when you think about what his next contract value could be. You know, even if you're not the Pacers, yeah, you could see what he did with Indiana and go, oh my gosh, a former top 10 pick, 22 years old, just shot 80% at the rim, was a quality defender, low turnover guy, shot the three ball well. Oh my gosh, how is this guy an unrestricted free agent? We have to throw money at him. But then there's going to be the other, you know, this is like the devil on one shoulder, the angel on the other. The devil's shoulder is going to go, well, hold on, this guy was just terrible with the other team he was on. Like, what is going on? How do you kind of value that player? And so I think the sample size is a big factor there that the Pacers and other teams have to consider. And for the Pacers, who are limited in what they can offer them, that might actually be a good thing. Like, you can't end up shooting yourself in the foot almost because of the restriction they have, because then if he is the player he was in Phoenix, or more so that than the guy he was in Indiana for 22 games, then great. You didn't overpay him because you literally couldn't. But then you had to give up stuff to convince him that that is still the best opportunity for him, at least in the situation that makes sense to me on how this is going. So I think the pros massively outweigh the cons. Like, Jalen Smith at his age certainly needs more time to grow. He's only, again, been in the NBA for 17 months. That is unbelievable. Chris Duarte won't have been in the NBA for 17 months until November of this year. Actually, he got drafted in late July, right? Because that was pushed back here as well. So he won't be at 17 months till December, right? Like, that is what we're talking about. And Jalen Smith's played two full seasons. So to put that all in perspective, like, there is a lot of wild card here that dissuades teams from offering a lot, including the Pacers, and maybe dissuades them from saying, you know what, let's not sacrifice the resources to free up minutes for this guy. We've got Miles Turner. We've got Isaiah Jackson. We've got O'Shea Brissett. We like the front court guys we have. We've got Goga Bitadze under contract too. Like, they have young guys that they are known commodities under contract less risk there. So that's why they might not decide to pursue this, just because it might take a lot of swapping of pieces to actually fit Jalen Smith in a situation that makes sense for him and allows him to continue to grow in a way that maybe he does grow off of what he was with the Pacers, but maybe he is a little more like he was with the Suns, and who knows? The ethos of those teams maybe fits Jalen Smith in one spot more than the other. It's just, you know, one has this mega talented team that's making JaVale McGee and Frank Kaminsky look awesome. And no offense to those guys, they're quality NBA players. But if, you know, Jalen Smith not thriving in that situation certainly has to matter in this discussion about what his future could be. So I think that his play with the Pacers is, for the Pacers especially, more important to them and how they view what he could be with them and in the future if they try to re-sign him. But all the factors at play suggest that, you know, maybe there are reasons for the Pacers to have some pause about the decisions they make at the center position. But in general, the pros, I think, are stronger. He was super talented for them. He fits really well with Tyrese Halliburton. I think that's a big one here because he can shoot pretty well, or did shoot pretty well, and plays multiple positions. And because he's quick and speedy and has a lot of room to grow, you know, that's a guy that a team in the Pacers situation should want to pursue. So what do I think's going to happen? That's how I usually end these free agency things. Well, you'll have to find out after I tell you about the good folks over at Built Bar. Summer is coming. And with summer, you're going to need some food on the go. Built Bars are the perfect snack to take with you wherever you are, in your golf bag on the golf course, in your briefcase at work, in your backpack at school, or in your bag at the beach. Wherever you are, Built Bar has got to be a part of your day. They're healthy and delicious protein bars, 100% covered in chocolate, so you don't have to sacrifice delicious for health anymore, which is something that drives me crazy. With Built Bar, you can have both. They're all 100% covered in real chocolate. That means with Built Bar, you can eat healthy and actually enjoy doing it. They have a puff variety that are infused with marshmallows, but without those, they still have a bunch of flavors without the marshmallow infusion that are absolutely delicious. I love the peanut butter brownie. They've got a banana cream pie. They've got a churro flavor. They're all so good, and they're all really healthy. You can see the macros right on their website, but most of them have 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, 17 grams of protein. You've got to try them. Go to built.com, buy your favorites, and when you check out, use the promo code LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off your order. That promo code, again, is LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, go check out Locked On NBA. Hear about the latest and greatest around the league, including that Heat win over the 76ers. They keep on rolling. And Maverick Suns, which I cannot tell you about because it is tied right now, right in the second quarter, a slog of a defensive quarter going on right now. They'll have that all covered on Locked On NBA. So what do I think is going to happen with Jalen Smith? Good question. So the trouble here is that there is not a lot of cap space out there in the NBA this coming summer. There are a lot of other teams, or there's a lot of exceptions out there and teams that can offer Jalen Smith more than the $4.76 million that he's worth. But generally, two things are the case. One, teams with cap space tend to either be younger teams or cheaper teams tend to be bad and like to sign young guys. So while there aren't a lot of teams with cap space, the ones that do have it, in theory, would be pursuing a guy like Jalen Smith. Over-the-cap teams tend to be pricier, tend to be, in general, a team that's trying to be good and may not want a wild card like Jalen Smith. So the cap space situation suggests that there, while Jalen Smith may, in a vacuum, be worth more than the money the Pacers can offer him, that offer might not really truly be out there given the ecosystem of the league. Maybe some team can use a tax pyramid level on a flyer like him, and that's going to be about $6 million next year. Pretty low-risk way of using that to me, just because maybe it's pretty risky, but not a hugely risky way of using a taxpayer mid-level exception on a guy like that if you're not a super highly contending team. So that those offers could be out there for him. But you know, in general, the low cap space situation in the league means that there's a lot of fluidity that's going to go into stuff like this. And what I mean by that is, you know, the two center needy young teams, for example, there's more than just these teams, but just thinking about two of them, Detroit and OKC, who are both young and growing. And, you know, Isaiah Stewart's on Detroit, like, yeah, okay, he's kind of nice. And the Thunder had like Derek Favors and some other younger players at center. You know, those guys, those teams might want a big man on their team. And even some other cap space potential teams. The Spurs could have space. Yeah, Capurto was awesome for them, but maybe they would like to pursue someone with cap space this summer. I cannot remember the other cap space team. There's another one that's going to have at least a decent chunk of change. But the center ones, OKC and Detroit, you know, maybe they do want Jalen Smith. But the other factor is the reason it's really hard to predict what's going to happen with Jalen Smith and where he might be headed or where he might be leaning. Portland is the other cap space team. And they might want a center. So they could be another team to watch in this discussion. The other factor here is that they could draft a center. Like Chet Holmgren could go to one of those teams. Jalen Duren goes to the other. Boom, they no longer have center needs. There's no longer big needs for those teams. So it's hard to truly say, like, who the teams that are going to be lining up for Jalen Smith could be. And the reason that that is a factor is, like, if there's not a ton of teams lining up, all of a sudden his value goes down. And then the Pacers, who already know that they, you know, can have, like, the right situation and ecosystem for him, like, suddenly they are a player in this. The team I was missing with cap space was the Orlando Magic, who have a lot of centers under contract already, especially some young ones, Wendell Carter and Mo Bamba. So all that to say, you know, it's hard to truly say what Jalen Smith's free agency could be because there's some fluidity with who these teams could be that could actually be lining up to sign him. Detroit makes a lot of sense to me. But again, if they end up with Chet or Durant or something like that, that doesn't make as much sense anymore. So it's hard to really predict anything. That said, in a vacuum situation where every team has equal cap space, they're all competing for the same resources, he seems like a 3-4 20 to 25 million kind of guy to me. He might want a shorter deal than that to try to get back into free agency while he's still super young, because it's rare that young guys who are picked in the top 10 have an opportunity to get back in free agency so young. But it's hard to truly predict what will happen with him in free agency without knowing what happens to other teams in the draft and also potentially in free agency. What if Detroit wants to sign the best center on the market, whoever that happens to be? What if the OKC wants to do something similar, right? So it's hard to truly predict what his market's going to be without knowing some of these teams' goals. But that's why I think in a vacuum, thinking of what his price point could be matters a lot in this discussion. If it's more than that 4.76 million number, some team will come in with a mid-level exception offer above what the Pacers can offer, and that's where that fit is going to matter. You know, the Rockets, for example, will have, even though they won't have cap space, will have their full mid-level exception. And they do have Alperen Şengün and Christian Wood, but Christian Wood's contract is shorter and Şengün is younger. Maybe they want another young big. Great. The Knicks, maybe. Mitchell Robinson's on their team, but like Nerlens Noel has a shorter-term deal. Who knows? Taj Gibson's a million years old. Maybe they would like to pursue a big man. The Miami Heat are the best team in the league at these reclamation projects, right? They'll have access to a lot of their MLE. I could go on and on. The Charlotte Hornets, who need big men so desperately. You know, there are teams who are big man needy or have the systems in place to help guys like this that could be lining up to spend their mid-level exception. So cap space isn't the only factor, but it is a factor. And all this to say, it's really hard to predict what Jalen Smith will get, because it could depend on where other centers go in free agency. So if you, listener, would like Jalen Smith to be back on the Pacers next year, what you are rooting for is every team that may need a center in some capacity to draft the big, and then you're hoping day one of free agency is just all the available bigs going to those teams very quickly, and then Jalen Smith is kind of out of situations that make sense for him outside of being, you know, the third big for the Pacers. And that would be a fine role for him, but you know, may not be exactly what he's looking for. So I always try to come up with some contract comparisons from the 2021 free agency period that could apply to the player and see if any of them make sense for a deal for that player. Jared Vanderbilt last summer, maybe not the perfect choice for a player here, but last summer he got 3 for 13 from the Minnesota Timberwolves and was considered kind of a wild cardy young project at the time. He was only 23 at the time, I believe. You know, that seems a little young. He obviously has already outplayed that deal. That starts at $4.3 million, so within Jalen Smith's range. Hamidou Diallo got 2 years, $10 million from the Detroit Pistons as a free agent last summer. He was 23 at that time. You know, talented young wing fitting there. That is more money than Jalen Smith. These are not the best comps. These are just some young guys who got money. Talen Horton Tucker at about 21 years old, 3 years, $30 million to go back to the Lakers. He was thought of very highly, so that's a high-end one. That's why I don't think he'll get that much. But I do think, you know, the $5 million per year plus raises about that Hamidou Diallo mark could make sense, and that's why I say 20 to 25 million. Here's the one that I think is the slam dunk comp. The slam dunk comp for Jalen Smith's contract, and one that, you know, sometimes agents use prior contracts. In fact, a lot of times agents use prior contracts to negotiate new deals for their team. Zach Collins is the guy here. Zach Collins going from the Portland Trailblazers to the San Antonio Spurs. He was 23.7 years old. So older than Jalen Smith is now. He just turned 22 in March by a year and a half, coming off of some injuries as well, a factor for Zach Collins. So Zach Collins was probably a little better, but also like a roughly top 10 pick. coming off of a rookie scale deal, unrestricted. He went to San Antonio on a three-year, $22 million deal starting at about $7.3 million. That seems perfect to me. From a comp and value perspective, Zach Collins setting that market at something that makes perfect sense to me. And that's what I think about makes sense for Jalen Smith, is that level of deal. 3 years, $22 million on a team that's willing to take a risk on him as a reclamation project, or thinks he can be the answer at center for them, and it ended up at San Antonio. But Zach Collins was not the answer because Jakob Poeltl was so good for them. But in general, that's the kind of thing that makes sense. But oh, by the way, only about $10.11 million of that Zach Collins deal was guaranteed because of the injuries he was coming off of. So he got 2 years, $11 million guaranteed of that three-year, $22 million deal. And that is where it's an even better comp to Jalen Smith to me, because of all the risks at play, and where the Pacers, who can offer at best 2 years, $10.6 million, would be thinking, hey, maybe we've got a shot here. So do the Pacers have a shot at keeping Jalen Smith? I would say maybe, right? If you see those Jared Vanderbilt, Hamidou Diallo numbers, like, that's close, I think, for at least a young player impact comp. But in terms of bigs, Zach Collins' deal is going to be a good barometer that makes some sense here as well. So I think if Jalen Smith gets a decent offer from one of these young crappy teams where he's going to be in the rotation no matter what, I think that a lot of teams can offer more money than the Pacers. And I think if you had to give me percentage chance he's back with the Pacers, like 20%, I would say, just because the contract situation is tough. And if he is back, I would think that either the Pacers trade away at least one big, or a lot of the other cap spacey teams acquire a big in the draft or free agency, or both of those things happen. So it's still possible Jalen Smith is back with the Pacers. And if he is, I think the deal is almost certainly going to be 2 years, that exact maximum he can get, right? I've already said it, but like $10.7 million. And probably an option, a player option in the middle. Although maybe not necessarily if he has no other options for Jalen Smith, but a player option would be the way to entice him to return to the Pacers, because then he can opt out if he's really good and force renegotiations or go somewhere else. But then the Pacers are back in the same bind again next summer. Maybe they don't want to be there, whereas if they do it where he gets the full 2 years guaranteed, at least they have full bird rights at that time to offer whatever they want. That's right after Haliburton gets expensive, though. So as usual with these things, there's a ton to consider. And I think, unfortunately for the Pacers, Jalen Smith's situation lends to him signing with another team. But depending on how other things go for them, depending on how other things go for other teams, he still could be back. And I think people saying they have no shot of affording him, I think that's a little much. You know, it's not that they have no shot of affording him. I think it's that they currently do not have the best offer available, but they can get really close. And so because there's some familiarity there, they have some advantages, they established his value, I think they have a shot. I don't think they have no chance. But it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a fascinating free agency, and I always love these ones with unique situations as they set kind of a baseline for what happens in future situations. Like, it's very rare that a top 10 pick, in fact, exceedingly rare that a top 10 pick has their third-year option declined. And I am going to be so interested in how Jalen Smith's free agency goes. We'll, of course, break down every step of the way here on the Locked On Pacers podcast. Tomorrow, we're going to do more player season reviews, and then Friday, another prospect breakdown as we load up for draft content, because the NBA Draft Combine is in 5 days. If you believe it, 5 days. We'll be doing all draft stuff, way more draft stuff next week with the lottery starting as well. So stay tuned for that. Thank you guys a ton for listening. Hope you have a great day, and we see you tomorrow.